This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. It's Anything Goes Friday, although Swami Beyondananda is going to drop by in about 2 hours and say hi to us. It's going to be a fun and interesting conversation. Other than that, you know, the topics of the day, the lines are open. The telephone number is 202-808-9925. The breaking news at this moment is that the feds apparently have a two-minute tape. Rudy Giuliani, Trump's lawyer, has confirmed this. A two-minute tape of Donald Trump and Michael Cohen talking about paying off, apparently, Karen McDougal. The payoff, excuse me, ended up being routed through, if press reports are accurate, through David Pecker's company, which I think is called American Media. It's the company that owns the National Enquirer. And because it was, they did this catch and kill thing, you know, they paid Karen McDougal for her story about her affair with Donald Trump, which apparently lasted many months in the year immediately after the birth of Barron Trump, their now 11-year-old son. And then, you know, he paid her for it, or his company paid her for it. Pecker's company paid her, Karen McDougal, for the story, and then killed it, you know, buried it. So, you know, not a noble day in the annals of American journalism, although I'm not sure that the National Enquirer was ever really considered part of the, you know, the pantheon of American journalism. You probably caught the story about President Obama being in South Africa for the what would have been the 100th anniversary of the birth of Nelson Mandela. And the capital of South Africa, of course, is Pretoria. And in Pretoria, we have an embassy, and we have an ambassador. I think we have an ambassador. Actually, I'm not sure if Trump has bothered to fill that job or not. But in any case, this article from citizen.co.za, it's the South African daily newspaper, right, which is presumably called The Citizen, article by Brian Sakuto. And I caught this, by the way, by catching it. I caught a tweet from my colleague Joe Madison on Sirius XM, and one of the very best talk show hosts in the country, bar none. And Joe tweeted out, you know, one should never underestimate how low he can go, which is a quote from the article. It's a quote from visiting professor John Strumlau about Donald Trump. He says he has a penchant for pettiness and a strange fixation on denigrating and dismissing virtually all the actions by his predecessor. That would be President Obama. Well, here's what happened. Typically, when a former president goes to a foreign country, the U.S. ambassador in that foreign country instructs the embassy to help him out with whatever he needs. I mean, obviously, we provide ongoing Secret Service security to former presidents, but you know, if you're going to be in a country, the embassy can help coordinate publicity or, you know, any kind of diplomatic meetings or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of things that embassies do on behalf of, you know, senior officials and particularly former presidents. Apparently, well, not apparently, I mean, this is a report in this South African newspaper, and I quote, "The Trump administration ordered that Barack Obama not be given any assistance by the American Embassy in South Africa. This is a break from the diplomatic tradition of offering support to any visiting American leader. None of the U.S. Embassy staff had to play any role in President Obama's visit to South Africa. Quote, due to instructions by Washington that Obama should not be provided any assistance, according to a highly placed source. In the past, the U.S. Embassy has always provided full support to any visiting American leader, regardless of party affiliation." Amazing. What's even more amazing to me, frankly, is, you know, I mean, A, how outrageous this is, and B, how it's not even being covered in the American media. This came out of the South African media. That's pretty amazing. Alan Pike Twitter, Alan Pike is, excuse me, Twitter. Alan Pike is writing over at thinkprogress.org. The headline, "This is it for you, you're effed, inside ICE's abuse of migrant kids at a frigid old Walmart. Children are sleeping on floors and being cussed out by guards, subsisting on meager rations of beans, crackers, and tortillas that leave them feeling ill, and passing the night sleeping on floors under bright lights in a converted Walmart in South Texas." The news reports of harsh physical conditions, humiliating psychological abuse, and basic deprivation at the so-called Casa Padre facility in Brownsville, Texas, came almost a month after President Donald Trump took symbolic steps to quash public outcry over his family's separation policy. They've got hundreds of sworn affidavits from children and parents about these god-awful, the conditions in which they find themselves today in the world's richest and most powerful country shock the conscience. In many cases, the only bathroom the children are allowed to use is located inside their holding pen. There's a security camera in the room which points to the bathroom in the cell where a 17-year-old from Guatemala named Noe is being kept with a dozen other boys, he said. "There is no privacy. It's dirty. They don't clean it. The room is always cold. The guards took my sweater. I sleep on the floor. There are three mattresses, but the boys from Honduras have taken them," he said, adding that those other boys threaten to stab him if he falls asleep. "The guards call us Guatemalans burros or stupid and say we don't understand anything." Thinkprogress.org, you can read the whole story. It is breathtaking what's going on there. ProPublica has a piece about health insurers. And this is fascinating. The story, this is by Marshall Allen. And he is talking about this insurance industry. You know, you get these industry events where they you know, rent a hotel and a bunch of ballrooms and invite, you know, companies who want to sell things to the industry to set up booths and things like that. And apparently this is one for the health insurance industry. And he writes, to an outsider, the fancy booths at last month's health insurance industry gathering in San Diego aren't very compelling. A handful of companies pitching, quote, lifestyle data, and salespeople touting jargony phrases like, quote, social determinants of health. But dig deeper, and the implications of what they're selling might give many patients pause. A future in which everything you do, the things you buy, the food you eat, the time you spend watching TV, keep in mind your smart TV, in all probability, most of them do, is actually keeping track of every show you watch and reporting it back to the TV manufacturer or certainly to the manufacturer of the operating system, which in most cases is Google. So anyhow, dig deeper into a future in which everything you do may help determine how much you pay for health insurance. With little public scrutiny, the health insurance industry has joined forces with data brokers to vacuum up personal details about hundreds of millions of Americans, and there are only 300 and some odd million of us, including, odds are, many readers of this story. The companies are tracking your race, education level, TV habits, marital status, net worth, what you post on social media, whether you're behind on your bills, what you order online, and then they feed this information into complicated computer algorithms that spit out predictions about how much your health care could cost them. Are you a woman who recently changed your name? You could be newly married and have a pricey pregnancy pending. Or maybe you're stressed and anxious from a recent divorce. That too, the computer's model predicts, may run up your medical bills. Are you a woman who's purchased plus-size clothing? You're considered at risk for depression. Mental health care can be expensive. Low income and a minority? That means the data brokers say you are more likely to live in a dilapidated and dangerous neighborhood, increasing your health risks. All of these things, of course, would lead to higher prices for your health insurance. It's nuts. It's just nuts. There is, it's, I don't know how to say it beyond that. It's just nuts. Oh, I got a whole bunch of other news stories here. We'll get to those as time goes on. But as I said, it's anything goes Friday. Let's pick up some phone calls here. Ken in Geneva, Illinois. Hey, Ken, what's on your mind today?
Yes, I'm a Korean vet, and I would like to inform all those vets out there that we still have sworn to defend the Constitution, and it's all enemies, foreign and domestic. And we are now domestic in helping the country. The only way we can do it is to get rid of all these Russian, they've infiltrated the Republican Party,
yeah.
And the only way we can do What's... anything is defend... To
defend our country. I get it, Ken, and forgive my interrupting you, but we're going to hit a break here in a second. But the point that I would make that I think is a really important one is that you've got the billionaire Rupert Murdoch running his right-wing empire that on a daily basis lies to and frightens American citizens on behalf of billionaire interests, including the billionaire interests of Donald Trump. And then you've got the right-wing Koch brothers and their network who, on a regular basis, are funding politicians who will lie to you about climate change, and as will they themselves, and many other issues, and actively, in my opinion, working to basically take down what's left of the New Deal and the Great Society, which I think most Americans would say comport with American values. So, and they're using race to divide us, they're using philosophy to divide us, they're using phrases like far left and all this kind of, we're being torn apart for the profits of Koch Industries and Rupert Murdoch. It's nuts.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of your calls right after the 17 minutes past the hour. And welcome back. Andrew, watching us on YouTube in Austin, Texas. Hey, Andrew, what's up? Andrew? Whoop. Sometimes people try to answer the phone and they end up hanging up by accident, which is what I'm guessing happened there. Looks to me like everybody else is listening on a commercial radio station right now. So, back to some of my, I think, more important details here. This is the kind of stuff that happens when you have basically a racist in chief. When you've got a president who climbed his way to the top of the Republican Party by claiming that President Barack Obama was a secret Muslim communist, or Kenyan Muslim communist, whatever, and the whole birther thing. And this is from the Daily Kos, Gabe Ortiz. This is from yesterday. Racist attacks have surged following Donald Trump's placement into the White House. In California, hate crimes involving anti-Latino bias have surged 52%. That is not an inconsequential amount of surge, right? I mean, that's a big deal. It's also happening in detention facilities. I shared a little bit of that story with you just a moment ago. At least 800 complaints of abuse motivated by hate or bias in 34 detention centers and prisons. It's nuts. Stonewall Mary, watching us on Facebook Live. Hey, Mary, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom? Long time no talk to you.
Thank you.
I have been raising the flag, number one, on this immigration where they've been taking the parents. You'll see the dad will leave to work, and the dad drives around the corner, and boom, they'll grab him. And then the mom will pull out of the car with the children and bring them to daycare and the school. And when she pulls away from the curb after dropping off the kids, boom, they grab her. And then they don't even wait. They wait until the kid is getting out of school, and they would grab the children and then put them into the detention centers. And I've been talking about this for the last 7 years. So it's so nice to see some of mainstream media picking up on this finally.
Yeah.
But what I was going to ask or talk about is everybody from, the lowest end of government to the highest end of government, they all say we need new legislation, new acts, new laws put into place to protect our rights or whatever. In reality, we got to quit saying this. We got to overturn any case laws and go through the books and look at the laws. The first one we start with is the 1793 case with John Quincy Adams arguing the federal courts to be closed to any citizen trying to sue like Dow Chemical for poisoning the farmland or Monsanto or whatever. John Quincy Adams closed the court case for us as citizens to go into a federal court and sue for our rights to our land of losing our life, land, property, prosperity due to that contamination. And it also gave birth to the 11th Amendment and the Neutrality Act. So it's a perfect example of how we need to overturn laws and quit writing ones, because all they are is a fresh branch on a dead tree.
Yeah. I strongly disagree, Mary. But thank you for calling and sharing your opinion. I think, you know, good laws are good laws and bad laws are bad laws. And I think that we should be passing more good laws and deleting more bad laws. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's just get into the news of the day, as it were. Christopher in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hey, Christopher, what's up?
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm well. What's on your mind?
Okay. Yeah, my concern was recently with Trump's meeting with Putin.
Christopher, your phone sounds muffled, almost like you have your thumb over the microphone or something. Could you make sure that it's clear and speak a little louder?
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, sir.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. Trump's recent meeting with Putin.
I'm sorry, Christopher. Your phone has again faded into obscurity. I'm going to put you on hold. Christopher's on line three. Arthur, if you can figure out what's going on. Valerie in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Valerie, thanks for listening to AM 1350. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I got to meet you, and after 2011, I came to you. You were speaking in Salem, and I came to you and told you that we got burning skin after Fukushima blew up. Do you remember me?
I don't remember specifically, but keep going.
Well,
what's the point of the call?
So I had a son, who had schizophrenia for 10 years, but he never admitted it until January 28th. And for 3 days, he told us that he was having horrible thoughts, and he needed to get into the hospital. And on two of those days, the last 2 days, he told us that he was having thoughts of stabbing someone, and the hospital knew that, and they refused to take him. And within a couple of hours of being sent home on the last day, he stabbed me in the back with a paring knife.
Yikes.
And it collapsed my lung, and I was in the hospital for 5 days.
Oh,
and,
my.
I thank you very much for your compassion, Tom, and so I just wanted to talk about, you know, what I have learned about the system. The only thing that they want to do to my son is prosecute him. And he's developmentally disabled before he was schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even use the phones in the jail. And what I have learned from the system, the HIPAA laws were, I think, totally to prevent the public from knowing what happened to Rosemary Kennedy, that the HIPAA law has been used so that the Oregon State Hospital doesn't have to tell me what they're doing to my son. And the full power of the state is their drugs and their tests.
Yeah, by Rosemary Kennedy, you're talking about Joe Kennedy's daughter that he gave a lobotomy to. This is tough stuff, Valerie, and the mental illness and the health industry are major issues. Thank you for calling in. I'm sorry to hear the story about your son. I hope that you can get some help. Tragically, in the United States, health insurance companies will go out of their way to deny care or deny payment for care for mental health. And when you can, very often, it's just, here, take this pill. And a lot of people with severe mental health issues need, you know, a whole lot more than just a pill, and they definitely need more than prosecution. And I'm so sorry to hear that that's how it's playing out. It's which goes back to this article that I was sharing with you earlier about the trade fair for the health insurance industry, where they're gathering information about people from their social media postings to figure out how much they should charge them for health insurance. And obviously, somebody who has mental health issues, they're going to figure out a way to charge you more. As the Trump administration has done away with, is in the process of doing away with, the pre-existing conditions clause, essentially, of Obamacare, so that now health insurance companies can not only charge you more, but can even deny you care. And her story is a great one for that. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back with your calls. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, I'm gonna do this at the top of the next hour because it's just an amazing story about Scott Pruitt and what's up with the EPA. Actually, two amazing stories back to back that I think you'll find fascinating. Roger in Detroit. Hey, Roger, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
That's good. What I was talking about today will be racism. It's anything goes Friday, and it's been anything goes in racism. Mm-hmm. Racism is what built this country. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. If a country was built off of racism and it has systematically kept itself in the number one position through racism, what makes you think it will end racism?
Well, first of all, this country wasn't built entirely on racism. It was slave labor was massive, and the systematic maintenance of an underclass, a racial underclass, and a variety of racial underclasses, has persisted from the founding of the Republic literally to this day, to the benefit of big business, and now increasingly to the benefit of politicians who want to tear us apart. So, I'm with you on that. I wouldn't say that we're number one as the result of racism, though. I think that we could have achieved those goals by other. I'll give it to you, Roger. Actually, your logic line makes perfect sense. So what was the question again? I'm sorry.
Now, what I wanted to say is, since they built this country off of racism, first by capturing the slaves and then by genociding the indigenous Indians, taking the land and calling it settling or colonizing, whichever you want to use. I call it genocide. They use terminology and miseducation to not tell you that there was a government here before our government. It was Turtle Island, and it was mostly ran by Africans, not Indians. They don't tell you that there was more Africans on this continent before they had the North American slave trade, because Morocco gave them the independence to colonize. These things are miseducation.
Are you talking about...
Which causes racism to continue because people lie so much and have made historical lies a way of history.
Yeah.
And instead of walking around with signs, the only way we can stop these people is stop their money. And their money comes from us. If people would one day a week stop going to the store, next day a week stop going to the gas station, next day of the week stop going to spend elsewhere, say online, then you don't use your cell phones another day a week. And then on Friday, everybody goes to the bank at 12 o'clock and try to get your money out of these institutions, then we will get action.
Well, to the extent that, Roger, you're suggesting that people, vote with their feet economically or vote with their wallets, I guess, as I'm not a big fan of boycotts. I don't think that typically they do much. I would argue that instead of our getting our money out of what are, in many cases, essentially racist institutions, and certainly our large banks got where they are to a large extent through redlining and practices like that. But there are alternate systems. There are credit unions. There are locally owned banks that are run by local people you know, who are reflective of their community with regard to race and gender and everything else, that we could be moving our resources to. There are locally owned stores we can be shopping from. There are, you know, phone companies like Credo Action, where you can, you know, every, you know, they donate, I think, over $1.5 million a year to progressive causes, particularly causes that you know, work around issues of race. So there's a lot of things that can be done proactively, as well as what you're talking about, Roger. Excellent point, and great way to start Anything Goes Friday. Dwayne in Tacoma. Hey, Dwayne, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Dwayne.
I'd like to say that hardly... Hi. I'd just like to say that hardly anybody says the fact that the immigrants, especially those from the South, are essential to the well-being of our economy because they do the hard, dirty jobs that us white people wouldn't dream of doing.
Well, so, yes and no. You know, there was a time, Dwayne, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Jackie Gleason show, right? This was black and white TV back in the 1950s. And Jackie Gleason and Art Carney, who played the role of his neighbor and their wives. Jackie Gleason was a bus driver, and Art Carney worked in the sewers. And he used to come in his, you know, waders that came up to his chest, and it was kind of a joke. You know, he came out of the sewers. But he had a good job because it was unionized. And you know, both of these guys were unionized workers, and they both made good wages doing, you know, in the case of Art Carney in particular, crappy jobs. I mean, no pun intended. And so, you know, when John McCain said that we can't get, even if we paid $50 an hour, we couldn't get people to come to Arizona and pick lettuce, he got over 10,000 people contacting his office saying, if you're offering 50 bucks an hour, I'm out there picking lettuce in the hot sun in Arizona. It's not that white people won't do the job or Americans in general won't do the job, because I don't think this is limited to race. I think this has to do with immigration status. People who are doing the job are trying to build themselves a life, trying to get someplace, but they, you know, their starting point is way below that of naturalized or native-born Americans. But you know, that's what's going on, and so rather than saying, you know, I'm a fan of immigration. Immigration helps countries. Immigration has traditionally helped the United States. Immigration provides us with diversity and new blood and new energy, and there's a whole thing about, you know, the first two generations of immigrants.
Can I say something, please?
In just a minute. But that said, I would say that the biggest crisis that we have in that regard is not, you know, immigrants taking our jobs. It's that our employers are setting up situations where the wages are so low or they'll only hire people that they can easily exploit. Okay, Dwayne, what do you want to say?
I want to say that's true, but, you know, okay, so if you give them $50 an hour, that would be such a hurt on the economy. The amount of work that they do, it's just huge. Agriculture itself accounts for about 24% of the economy, and it's not just the fact that it's the wages. You know, I mean, I've been a bricklayer all my life, and I've worked in the fields. I wouldn't do it for $50 an hour, and I've done nothing but hard work.
Yeah.
You know, so this is brutal work.
I agree. I get it, Dwayne. When I was a teenager, I spent several weeks up in White Cloud, Michigan, picking apples and cherries with, you know, a whole bunch of itinerant farm workers. It was fascinating, and it was hard work. You're absolutely right. But I do think that if you pay a decent wage, you'll get workers. And yeah, it may increase the cost of food, but more people making better wages means that we'll have more money to buy food. I mean, this is not a zero sum game. Tony in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Tony, what's up?
Hi. The conversation has been fascinating as I've been listening, but I was struck by your points about the President Obama being in South Africa and the Trump administration, you know, advising the embassy to not help him.
Ordering the embassy.
I just wonder, why was that a priority? I mean, with all the things that are going on and the handful of people that they still have working for this administration, how did that rise to the level of we need to do something specific about that? That's just amazing to me. How do you account for that being on the radar at all?
I think that Trump has always hated Barack Obama. That the nation would elect a black president is incomprehensible to Trump. I mean, his job when he was a kid, or related to his job when he was a kid, was noting who was, quote, colored and who was not on the rental applications in his father's properties. He grew up in a racist stew. His father was arrested at a KKK rally. And I think that he absolutely hates Barack Obama. He built his political career on hating President Obama. Right. And now he has, along with much of the Republican Party, committed himself to reversing every single accomplishment that President Obama had while in office, with the goal, and this is the reverse of the Reagan Legacy Project, with the goal that 10, 20, 30 years out from now, people will look back and say, you know, hey, we elected a black guy as president and nothing good happened. And I say it's the opposite of the Reagan Legacy Project, because after Reagan left office, a bunch of billionaires funded this project to name a building after or put a statue up of Ronald Reagan in every single congressional district in the United States and in every country in the world. And they have accomplished this, by the way. It's, you know, how Reagan National Airport went from being National Airport to Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C. And so the Reagan Legacy Project was all about spending lots and lots of money to make everybody think that Ronald Reagan was some great savior of America, when in fact he began the utter destruction of the American middle class and began the process in a whole brand new modern Jim Crow era of tearing people apart based on race. His first speech as an official Republican candidate was in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where Schwarmer, Cheney, and Goodman were murdered, and he talked about states' rights. I mean, you know, this was his legacy. And so you've got, you know, the right-wing billionaires lifting up the Reagan legacy. At the same time, you've got a right-wing billionaire in the White House and his right-wing billionaire enabler, Rupert Murdoch, over on Fox News, doing everything they can to tear down President Obama's legacy. That's my opinion, Tony.
Yeah, well, thank you for the additional information. I knew about some of that, but it just seems so petty.
Yeah,
I guess if that's the way you're brought up and you're focused on that.
I think it's partly that, and I think it's partly that they really are looking at history. They really are thinking, you know, a generation or two down the road, and they want to make sure that, you know, future generations who literally were not born early enough to remember Barack Obama's presidency will think of him, you know, as in an ahistoric way, what did he do that was any good? You know, we need an Obama legacy project. Tony, thanks for the call. We'll be back. But this, you know, telling the embassy in South Africa and Pretoria, do not offer any assistance to President Obama, that is nuts.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
46 minutes past the hour. More back with more of your calls at Anything Goes Friday right after this. And welcome back. Andrew in Austin, Texas. Hey, Andrew, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Sorry about earlier. First time caller and made a rookie mistake trying to get you off speaker.
That's quite all right.
Anyway, yeah. So on Facebook feed last week, I saw there's going to be a far-right rally here in Austin next month. I don't know a whole lot about that, but in this era of Trump, it very well could be the sequel to Charlottesville.
They're happening all over the country. There's one happening in Portland next week. There's a piece in Daily Beast about it, of all places. But yeah.
Gotcha. Well, there is a counter-rally being organized the same day, which is August 18th, called Drown Out the Fascist Hate. Mm-hmm. It's happening in front of Austin City Hall, and you can read more details about that on its Facebook event page. And just wanted to get that on your radar.
Great. And the Facebook event page, people want to find it, they plug into the search engine on Facebook, what?
Just search the name of the event, Drown Out the Fascist Hate.
Drown Out the Fascist Hate.
Correct.
Got it. Cool. Thank you. Great to hear from you. Thank you very much. John in Hillsboro, Oregon. Hey, John, what's up?
Brett Kavanaugh. There's a couple of things I've been reading adding to what he called rights about and all that. It's not so much as it is pro-life, pro, you know, whatever, or anti-abortion,
yeah.
Or his opinion about the president above the law. But one thing, I think you probably mentioned this in your other shows, he doesn't think that people have, everybody has a right to vote. I mean, he's looking at the whole thing that there's nothing in the Constitution that allows whether your gender or your race, that you have that actual, what do you call it, privilege to vote. Yeah. And so I think that's one of the bigger ones, because I think he would spread that vimin
Well, that was, you know, I mean, that point was made by Rehnquist in his decision in Bush v. Gore, that there is no constitutional right to vote for president of the United States. But he was arguably referring to the Electoral College. What decision of Brett Kavanaugh's or statement of Kavanaugh's are you referring to? I'm unfamiliar with this.
Well, I was Googling, you know, things on, you know, I guess it was from The Hill, whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were mentioning, you know, one of his concepts about, you know, he's really a big groupie on not letting everybody to vote. You know, like, I think when the Constitution was around, only people that, you know, own property could vote.
Well, it depended on the state. But at the federal level, I'm not sure that there were restrictions, but, you know, because there were women and African Americans in the northern states who were actually voting at the time of the ratification of the Constitution. Now, over the next 30 years, they pretty much did away with that. Pretty much every state did. But you had some states, Rhode Island, Delaware, I think parts of New York State, you know, it didn't matter. Everybody could vote for a while there until the 1810s thereabouts. But back to you.
Well, he was I just look like he's warping the whole spirit of the Constitution. You know, like people read the Bible and, you know, some sects or denominations are, you know, created out of, you know, five or six, you know, chapters of the Bible.
Or even just a few verses. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that they're cherry picking what they want, and this is something that has contaminated and damaged Christianity over the years. And I would say probably that's true of every major religion, and now it is with our democracy. Excellent point, John. I'll have to dig in and see what I can find out about Brett Kavanaugh and the right to vote. It's 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back with more of your calls after this. Back at Anything Goes Friday. Tom Hartman here with you and Stephen in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Stephen, what's in your mind? Stephen? I am not hearing Stephen, so let's try Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, not too much, Tom. Hey, I think you got the best insight into Donald Trump's banking, and I mean that as a compliment. I know a lot of people may, you know, it may be controversial, but the Dan Coates did this interview in Colorado,
right?
And he, I think, you know, as a former intel professional myself, I think Dan Coates has towed the line about as much as anybody could in that community for Donald Trump.
Yeah, I predict within 3 weeks he'll be out. I don't think he'll have a job.
Oh, you think he'll be out of a job? Yeah, because he kind of mocked Donald Trump's intellect, right?
Yep.
And isn't that sin number one?
Yep. And he did it in front of an elite audience, right? And along with Andrea Mitchell, the elite, elder statesperson of and a woman at that of the press corps. I mean, you know, she's been part of the press corps she's been covering presidents maybe before Reagan, I don't know, but for a long, long time. And she's a very, very good reporter. And all of things, you know, all these things that Donald Trump hates, and Dan Coates was being very, very nice with her, and he made a joke when he learned that Trump had invited Putin. It was like, well, that's going to be special, and everybody laughed, and I'm sure if Trump caught that, and I can't imagine how he wouldn't, given how many hours of television he watches every day, that he's gonna wait there's an old phrase from a Shakespeare play that I'm missing here, but an appropriate amount of time, and then, you know, the axe will fall. It's my prediction. We'll see. But you were saying, as an intelligence official, as a former intelligence official yourself, your thoughts on this, Dave?
No, I think, okay, because look at what they did to Andrew McCabe. No one really is talking about that.
Yeah.
They did, that was extraordinary dirtiness, what they did to McCabe. We all us federal employees, we hold our retirement as sort of sacred, you know, even though it's not a whole lot of money, you know, for Donald Trump, you know what I'm saying? But we hold it as kind of sacred.
Yeah, well, and for people, Dave, let me interrupt, because there's probably a lot of people who don't know what you're talking about. Andrew McCabe was fired by Donald Trump the day before, as I recall, correct me if I'm wrong, the day before his retirement would have fully vested, and he would have been able to retire with a full pension.
Really extraordinary amount of evil. Yeah. And you know what you were talking about with Obama, you know, and Trump's hatred of Obama? There was an ancient Roman custom of damnatio memoriae, right, where they defaced all the, like if an emperor fell into disrepute, they would try to erase him from memory. Damnatio memoriae is what the ancient Romans called it. That's kind of what Trump's doing to Obama, isn't
I think
it?
So, too. I absolutely agree, and I don't think it's just Trump. I think the entire billionaire network that brought us the Reagan Legacy Project is bringing us the Obama Amnesia Project. That's my take on it. Dave, thanks for the call. It's good to hear from you. David in Chicago. Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I heard you in conversations talking to Republicans and how passionate and adamant they are about keeping Mexicans and other brown people out of this country. And you often mention that the problem is that the employers are employing these people, and that none of these troll Republicans that call in seem to be on board with punishing corporations for hiring the illegals.
Right.
And I just wonder why that is, and also whether or not the Democratic Party can introduce a bill in Congress saying that they would like to punish these corporations from hiring these illegals, and that way they will show these Republican trolls and all these other people who are passionate about keeping Mexicans out, that the Democrats also want to protect the border as well, and therefore they feel that going after the corporation will resolve this issue as opposed to constantly having ICE go out and arrest these individuals.
Yeah, it's a good point, David, and you know, unfortunately, the law has been on the books. I mean, you know, our immigration laws, you know, it's a misdemeanor, but it's against the law to be in the United States. But it's a felony to hire somebody, or it can be a felony, to hire somebody and then exploit them based on the fact that they're exploitable because they're not citizens. And, you know, Reagan stopped enforcing that law in 1986. And to the best of my knowledge, no president since then has started enforcing it. And I would say that's a testimony to the power of wealthy white businessmen, by and large. And you know, Donald Trump, I mean, he's actually gone after a couple of companies. He busted a 7-Eleven chain. I don't know if they were owned by minorities. It wouldn't surprise me. Some of these the regional 7-Eleven chains are owned by, particularly, you know, people from South Asia. But to the best of my knowledge, he's not prosecuting the actual employers. He's just dragging out, you know, these hapless people who came here trying to make a better life for themselves and their families. So, David, I think that there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, and that the Democrats could use that. I doubt they will, but they could. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.